I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash. This is Building Bridges.
The First World War ended in November 1918 with an armistice, which was declared at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, marking a moment of hope and the promise of peace. For many years, this day served as a powerful reminder of the horrors of war and a collective vow of no more war. However, in 1954, the U.S. Congress redefined this day as Veterans Day, shifting its focus to the glorification of war and those who wage it. For the last 10 years or so, Veterans for Peace has been working to reclaim November 11th as Armistice Day, a day that is dedicated to ending war once and for all. As we reflect on the true meaning of this holiday this year, Veterans for Peace is calling for an armistice, a permanent ceasefire in Palestine, Lebanon, and throughout the Middle East. Inspired by peace-loving people around the world, we pledge, say they, to carry this message forward. They will not be complicit in genocide. No one is free until we are all free.
We're joined by Mike Ferner, National Veterans for Peace, and Terry Logan, Humanitarian Rights Counselor for Veterans for Peace, and by Joy Meltzer, Veteran for Peace.
Joy is an active duty Air Force officer and a recent graduate of the Air Force Academy. Veterans for Peace is assisting her with an application for conscientious objector status. And I know that Joy has to leave us early for another event that she's participating in. So I want to begin with Joy, and I really want to ask what the issue is that has attracted her to Veterans for Peace and why, after going through graduating the Air Force Academy and so on, she is now considering becoming a conscientious objector. And thank you all for the work that you do against war and for peace.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me on. I just want to start out by saying that Veterans for Peace was instrumental to not only helping me and get my application through, to include helping me cover legal fees in my hearing, which is one of the parts of the conscientious objector application. But it was local VFP members in my chapter who first really made that effort to cross the aisle, so to speak, to me, who was still currently active duty, who was still currently in a very military headspace. They're the ones who reached out to me first and extended that hand of friendship and welcoming that helped me get to where I am today. And the idea of reclaiming Veterans Day as Armistice Day is something that resonates so strongly with me, because I think at the Air Force Academy, we have history lessons, we have military strategic lessons, and we see the cycle of violence that happens throughout history, where one war inevitably leads to another. World War One, in and of itself is ironic, was called the war to end all wars, then only really became a prequel to its successor, which was just as bloody, just as violent. Coming out of the military academy and being able to see for myself that my country, the United States, has just been so constantly embroiled in war, I started asking myself whether that's the right answer. You know, being in the military academy, of course we're taught that, you know, war is something that we don't have to fight, but we need to be ready in case we do. And I remember looking at this war machine, looking at the process of warfare, and thinking to myself, we're not preparing for war. We're in it right now. We're fighting right now. Why are we fighting? My thinking started evolving to seeing that there are multiple avenues that people can take to peace. And one is, of course, the time-old tradition that many military members believe in, which is deterrence, which is the use of force to create peace, which a lot of our Vietnam veterans saw through that lie pretty quickly. And now the path that I'm on, a path of peacemaking, is that if we all collectively lay down our weapons and say that we want to work with each other, that's the more realistic path to peace. when people call me naive or people call me idealistic for thinking that way, I always point to history. And I point to what we know from history, that violence only breeds more violence. Hate only breeds more hate. And so how can someone look at that and say that violence is somehow going to bring about this peace that we are all so desperately searching for? That's really what helped me along the way on my journey to being a peacemaker and to trying to convince other people that the way to true peace is by starting out with peace. I think, you know, the Reverend Martin Luther King had a very great perspective on this during the civil rights movement. I think that peace is something that has been shown to work. And as long as the people on the ground, the people who are fighting, as long as they continue going, yes, I'm going to pick up this gun and point it at someone else, as long as that continues to happen, we're not going to see that future. And so I believe we need to start at the bottom. We need to start reaching across the aisle like those VFP members did all those months ago. We need to start reaching out to people, having these conversations with people, because change starts small. If you want to start a revolution, you got to start with the masses, your neighbors and the people around you. And that's want to hop on here and encourage everybody to do, is that you can target the people in power, you can target the people who are the root of our issues, but at the end of the day, the people who are going to have your back are the people around you. And I love what someone was saying earlier about organizing, getting out in your communities. You can join multiple communities based on your own experiences and your own backgrounds. I'm part of a lot of faith-based organizations. I'm part of military and veteran organizations who are all actively working for the same goal. And it's a beautiful thing to see all these people coming together around a shared goal and helping each other, supporting each other. And one of the organizations that I helped found is an organization called Service Members for a Ceasefire. Because when I first started my journey, there wasn't really a lot of outreach towards the people currently in the military. They're the ones that we need on our side as well. They're the ones who really are the closest to what we're trying to struggle against. And honestly, they're the ones who get screwed over the most. Reaching out to them, forming communities and relationships with them is something that's going to be absolutely paramount to building a future based off of peace that we want to see.
And Joy, I don't even know if I should say transformed your thinking. I mean, you went into the Air Force Academy. You went into the military. Was it the genocide that's happening in Gaza? What transformed your position that you no longer want to be in the military, that this is not about deterrence, this is not about safety or self-defense, this is a period of war that you repudiate? How did you come to that kind of understanding?
Palestine was absolutely my turning point. We learn about the rules of warfare in school. We learn about not only the philosophy, but the cold, hard laws surrounding how a country is allowed to conduct warfare. As the months went on since October 7th, the more I saw human rights being just blatantly violated, not only with the full blessing of our government, but on our taxpayer dimes, the more I realized that this is the true, disgusting face of war. This is not what I had tricked myself into thinking it was at the academy. This is not some sort of lone wolf survivor's tale of heroism in the face of extreme danger. This is targeting defenseless civilians. And this is happening at the blessing of our government. And once you see those connections, it is so hard to unsee them. And I think that's why a lot of people have difficulty condemning the U.S.'s role in this, because when you condemn the U.S.'s role in Palestine, you have to start condemning other actions U.S. has taken over the years. You have to start questioning the morality of your own government when you condemn the actions of a foreign government that's one of its closest allies. It's a very difficult process. It's a very long process of deconstructing a very pro-military mindset that was ingrained in me since elementary, middle school even. I grew up in a very conservative family. I grew up in a very conservative area. And of course, everybody there was pro-military, support the troops, et cetera, et cetera. But not only that, that America is this bastion of freedom and this lighthouse of honor and glory and so on and so forth. And I had to tear all of that down when I started on my conscientious objector journey. I had to see the U.S. war machine for what it really was. The fact that the U.S. wasn't directly putting boots on the ground in Palestine, it didn't make a difference to me, because ultimately the military is the enforcement arm of this government. It's enforcer of foreign policy. So if I'm just, because it was the brain of the person holding the gun, and of course, if I'm part of that enforcement arm, then I'm part of this whole system that's causing harm, right? Not just because I didn't come up with the actions, or just because the military wasn't planning all these war crimes, doesn't mean that I am less culpable by being part of the system. You know, Palestine was a huge turning point for me to not only see the true horrors of what war looks like, because you can read about it all you want. You can read about how terrible the world wars were, Vietnam, every conflict we fought in the Middle East. You can read about how terrible they are. But when you see pictures of mangled children coming across your feed every day, that's a little bit different. That is much different, actually. That was really what broke through my thinking for me.
Well, Joy Metzler, thank you for your service to humanity and your dignity and your courage for what you do. I know that must have been an extraordinarily difficult decision, but how wonderful that you have people to work with like Mike Ferner.
Mike, what was the founding motivation for Veterans for Peace in 1985, and how has it grown in response to what policy and practices of the U.S. government?
And, of course, your support for people like Judy Metzler. How marvelous.
Yeah, well, to answer the question, the founding motivation in 85 was a number of veterans were very concerned and upset with our government's policy in Central America when we were arming the death squads in El Salvador and funding the Contras in Honduras and Nicaragua, seeing what was happening to the people of Central America. So we wanted to form an organization that spoke to that, was active against that kind of policy, not just against a particular war, but that's why our name was Veterans for Peace. We have since then encourage veterans from all branches of service and all backgrounds and theaters of war and periods of not quite so hot war to join and to lend their voice to try to get this country back to some kind of footing where we can be proud of where our tax dollars are going instead of what we see every day. I'd like to tell you what happened today. I live in Toledo, Ohio, where we had the city and the University of Toledo put together a big appreciation event, a breakfast for veterans and their families. And I don't know, about 2,000 to 3,000 people went to it. It was amazing. I went there. I had the Veterans for Peace flyer that talks about the genocide, and talk about armistice, which is a ceasefire, and have a ceasefire in Palestine and quit sending weapons. And the fact that the initial name of today was Armistice Day. 12 years ago, we decided we were going to stop calling it Veterans Day and go back to the original name of Armistice Day. So that's what our literature had to say. Also had a wonderful poem from Wilfred Owen, who was one of the great British poets. He got killed 4 days before the end of the war. His best known poem is called Dulce et Decorum Est. It's about his experience in the First World War. You know, I went there with that literature, and there were vendors there from all kinds of companies and social service agencies that wanted to either sell something or provide some kind of service to veterans, you know, VFW, the American Legion, on and on and on. But one of the things that I noticed was that there were two busloads of grade school kids that got dropped off. Now, after I got done passing out literature outside, I went inside. Here are these young kids, fourth graders, had been practicing, obviously, at school. Their part of the program was that they sang the Air Force song and the Marine Corps song and the Navy song and the Army song and the Coast Guard song to great applause by all the veterans from those various branches of service. And they were told from the podium what a wonderful job they did, and they were referred to as young heroes. And the hope was expressed that they would become heroes in their own right when they got older. And those young kids were so taken by that and so, you know, and we're steeped in a military culture, for one thing, flyovers at sporting events and commercials all over the place and on and on and on. And so these kids got to experience it firsthand and were greatly congratulated and thanked for their role there. And when they were leaving the building, I was outside and I was just as they were walking by, I said, "Thank you for singing." Two-thirds of them said to me the typical thing that they learned from their adults was, "Thank you for your service." And they were saluting me. Some of them were marching, you know, like the military march. And I thought, these are fourth graders. And that's what this culture does. And that's what this culture has to do to continue to prepare people to pay the bill, whether that's in blood or treasure, so that the people who run this country can continue to try to control the world and try to pretend to people like Joy Metzler, who just spoke, that when they join the military, they're doing something noble and they're protecting freedom. And it starts when these kids are in grade school. And I want to end with just this. This is the language that was in the congressional resolution that created Armistice Day as a national holiday. It says, "Whereas the 11th of November 1918 marked the cessation of the most destructive, bloody, and far-reaching war in human annals and the resumption by the people of the United States of peaceful relations with other nations, which we hope may never again be severed, and whereas it is fitting that the recurring anniversary of this day should be commemorated with thanksgiving and prayer and exercises designated to perpetuate peace through goodwill and mutual understanding between nations." That was what Congress passed when they created Armistice Day as a holiday. And in 1954, after Joe McCarthy had done his thing and we were all supposed to hate Russia and make sure that we didn't mind paying the taxes to fund the weapons buildup for the Cold War, Armistice Day was changed to Veterans Day. And you get stuff like I saw today with those fourth graders and displays of 50 caliber machine guns and military color guards and all of the trappings, nonsense, deification of the military. That's what we're seeing. And that's what Veterans for Peace is adding our voice to oppose and try to call out what's going on. We need to do more of it because our government is not even our own government. It's run by what I call the madmen arsonists that make the money from these wars. So we've got a big job ahead of us.
Terry Law, I'm thinking about you in the context of what Joy was saying and what Mike was saying, because part of your getting involved with doing veterans-related legal work, which is of an environmental nature and so on, had to do with the tragedy of your brother's experience with Vietnam. I want to know what your thoughts are against this heightened U.S. militarism, the threats, the bravura that we've seen from the Trump administration from his first term through his now perpetual running for office, the doctrine of Project 2025. This is the environment we're functioning in. And you sent a letter to the Biden administration about the nuclear arsenal of Israel and Israel's violation of the Arms Export Control Act and the Symington-Glenn amendments and so on. Talk about where you see now the issue of the work of Veterans for Peace and some of the campaigns that are going to be coming up, response to the genocide that is being funded, supported by the U.S. of Israel in its genocide of the Palestinian people. And thank you for all you've done as a lawyer for Veterans for Peace.
I see that the Armistice Day observances of old are going to fade because of the American preoccupation with not just having geographical distance from its wars, but having a technological distance to try to somehow make them seem more antiseptic. We are fighting increasingly high-tech wars with increasing robots. The Israeli Defense Force is showing us the enormous and gruesome potential of artificial intelligence in targeting supposed enemies and supposed terrorists. We are seeing that bombing from 30,000 feet, which certainly was heightened in World War II and refined even more during the Vietnam era and since, is the preferred method. And then we run into the liberals in this sort of controversy want more targeted smart weapons. They want smaller drones. They want the means of assassinating only small groups of people. What we're looking at is war has flipped over in the last 50 years in this country to our leading industry. It is enormously profitable. We don't, at least to our knowledge collectively, have very many boots on the ground in Israel or in the Middle East in general, except at military bases where a lot of troops are possibly going to be attacked if there is ultimately a huge explosion of militarism that happens in the Middle East. But what I see is the growing problem where there will be fewer dead GIs, but there will be as many or more dead others. We don't talk to them. We don't learn about them. Our schools our means of educating the young as to any options are being curtailed. We simply tell other countries, other societies, it's our way, or we will bomb you back to the Stone Age. Israel is acting those American principles out. It makes you shudder to think about how many more billions will it take to reduce an entire region to rubble and splattered bodies? And how much does that contribute to bringing about anything like a civilized existence on the planet? We need to learn to talk. We need to learn to relate in human terms. And I fear for this society, because I don't believe that we are moving it very much at all in those kinds of directions. I've seen some pretty ghastly results from American wars, and so I have some sort of personal memory and understanding of what can go wrong. I let me just say this. Sardonically suggested sometime after 9/11 that the vaunted eighth grade or a junior year in high school class trip globally should be, that school children should be taken to the crypt at one of the World War I battlefields in France, where there is a windowed huge bin that is believed to contain the remains of 60,000 unknown soldiers. That is the kind of exposure that people are going to need to understand that we have to stop, that this is a class war. It is always a class war. It is never a moral war.
In the time that we have left, I'd like to just do a go around. I hope that Joy is still with us. Joy, your final thoughts.
No, she's not here.
Okay, we did, as I said, Joy. She has another event, but I'm delighted that she was able to join us briefly. So, Mike and Terry, what is the next round of activities for Veterans for Peace in response to Palestine? And I really thank you for your love and your commitment to humanity and being able to stand up for what is right. And you've done this for years and years, both of you. So tell us where you go from here to continue to educate, agitate, and organize the public against war, and most seriously against the most immediate war, which is Palestine, Lebanon, an expanding war in the Middle East. Mike, and then we'll finish up with Terry Lodge.
Thank you, Mimi. I appreciate the invitation here, as always, in that last question. Where I'm going next individually as a member of Veterans for Peace is I'll be going to, I live in Toledo, and I'll be going to Fort Wayne, Indiana in a couple of weeks for a jury trial for being arrested for blocking the entrance to a Raytheon weapons plant in Fort Wayne. I plan on, best I possibly can, putting the war on trial and putting the arms manufacturers on trial and using the information that Terry generated with his letter to the State Department a few months ago to say that our government officials are the ones that are breaking the law. And it's time for citizens, veterans and non-veterans, to stand up and simply try to stop business as usual. And if that means blocking driveways into weapons factories or blocking entrances to congressional offices, so be it. We need to do a lot more of that. So that's what I'm going to be doing. And I'm encouraging our members around the country to step up and do more of that. And of course, our folks are and have been in the streets demonstrating over and over again. I just hope that we will find the wherewithal to take everything up a few notches.
Terry Lodge.
What I'm working on of late is drafting what I call the People's Genocide Indictment. What I'm crafting is almost a boilerplate type of set of allegations, citations to federal and international law. And the citation, simply rather like a traffic ticket, will be completed by inserting the name of someone's local arms manufacturing plant with some explanation of their contribution to the global militarism and especially shipping weapons to Ukraine and the Middle East. Hopefully, it will inspire people to deliver the indictment as well as consider civil disobedience in the form of some kind of reinforcement of the protest, particularly at plants where security won't let anyone get in to even deliver a few pages of paper. So that's one of the things we're going to be looking at as the corner turns to 2025.
Terry Lodge, Counsel for the Veterans for Peace, and Mike Ferner, National Veterans for Peace. Thanks for joining us.
How can people be in touch with you?
Very simple. Our website is simply veteransforpeace.org. People can get in touch with us there. They can write me. My email is very simple. It's mike@veteransforpeace.org. Mm-hmm. And we hope to hear from a lot of your listeners because we know that you've got the cream of the crop here.
Well, I think we had the cream of the crop, Joy Meltzer, Teddy Lodge, Mike Ferner, and Jack Gilroy, and so many of your members, and Susan Schnall, and we're going to continue to keep in regular touch so that you can help lead the way from the experience that you've had. Veterans for Peace, exposing the costs of war and militarism since 1985 while promoting a sustainable and peaceful world. Good Armistice Day to both of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
To you.
Thank you both.
I want to thank you for listening, for inviting us into your house. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we continue to build bridges, and we build bridges most specifically to those who are committed to fighting for a free, free Palestine from the river to the sea. We are each other's siblings. Together, we will win and stop the genocide. Again, you've been listening to, and we are, Building Bridges. Thank you.